everybody, to another installment of Innovation Crush.
Innovation Crush.
Robert, how are you doing?
I'm good. I'm good.
That's great.
How are you?
Can you tell I didn't really care?
Yes, I can.
So in case you guys don't know, this show is focused on really good ideas in the marketplace and how they happen and the awesome people behind them. To my right today in an awesome suit. I'm almost jealous. I feel like you kind of showed me up on my own show. Good thing
I didn't need to. I had to rush to get here. So
I know. Kai didn't, you didn't tell me it was suit day.
Yeah.
I'm going to introduce you a little bit. Keith Klinkscales. And define Keith Klinkscales for me.
Define in terms of my name, in terms of what I do, in terms of what do you want to talk about?
Who are you, the essence of the man?
Oh, well, I've been fortunate. I've been blessed. I've worked most of my career in entertainment culture and in sports culture. You know, I come from Connecticut, but I had an opportunity early in my life to, thanks to my parents, to go to Florida A&M University, which was the moment that kind of, you know, every life you have an epiphany, and going to FAMU was an epiphany for me because it really opened me up to the fullness of culture. And I've been able to go from there to business school, and I've had fantastic mentors and fantastic people look out for me. So I've been very blessed. I can't complain about that. Even when I had, you know, you have peaks and valleys. Even when I had valleys, having good people around has been something that's been helpful to me.
So what exactly was the cultural epiphany you had at FAMU?
Well, I mean, when I grew up, growing up in Trumbull, Connecticut, it is, you know, it's not a paragon of diversity, you know. And going to Florida A&M, you got to be exposed to folks that were, I met Luke from Two Live Crew there. I heard hip hop for the first time.
Nice.
See the world famous Florida A&M Marching 100. I got to see, you know, real culture.
So you just got your eyes opened
I got to see some
especially with Luke and the Two Live Crew.
I got to see some things, and then that enabled me to get. I was able to get, you know, good job opportunities, and I got to come back and work in New York and banking, and that led me to working in private banking, and I learned about entrepreneurs. And one of the entrepreneurs I learned about was dealing in television and radio and media.
Right.
And that was the thing that kind of led me to media. And when I was doing that, you have that moment you say, well, this is what I want to do.
Right.
And all that came from basically a combination of hip hop in 1986-ish, you know.
Yep.
You know, hearing, I remember distinctly, I'll never forget. Never forget hearing the song "The South Bronx" for the
South
first
Bronx.
Time.
Yeah, by South Bronx
by Boogie Down Productions. Yep. and hearing.
Chris. I sing a lot on the show, just so you know. So
that, look, I'm,
forgive
I'm,
me.
I'm with it. I was waiting for Robert to come. I was waiting for him to drop the hook.
He dances. Yeah. So
I'm background dancer.
Two man team.
Yeah.
So you know, I mean, these are the things people always talk about. You know, lyrics and hip hop that can it change things, and does it affect the kids? And I can tell you, at a young age, you know, I attribute a lot of my a lot of the energy that I have from, you know, listening to hip hop. I was blessed to see Spike Lee's first movie.
Right.
I think it was not Do the Right Thing. It was
She's Gotta Have It. Yes.
And then when Do the Right Thing came along, you know, to have a black guy making a film, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't get into the party, but I was so excited about it. I was outside
the window with you.
Well, we're outside the police barricades with the horses.
Right.
You know? And that was just something, you know, I wanted to do. So it was these are the things that, you know, laid the foundation for a life and allowed me to get into culture.
So you're a hip hop head at heart.
Well, I'm a transplanted hip hop head because I grew up, you know, listening to, you know, to, you know, AC/DC and Jay Giles Band and Meat Loaf and things like that in high school. And then, you know, you go to FAMU and you come back out and I'm in New York, and then you have a different perspective.
Like, hey, music. Keith's back. Get off me.
You know, you have a different thing.
Meat Loaf confuses me, by the way. Just I'm, like, his whole acting career has just taken off. And you're like, wait, I thought you made weird songs. Cats in the Cradle. Yeah.
No, the Paradise by the Dashboard Light, that was just one of those, you know.
Right, right.
You know, one of those songs. So,
So let's fast forward to one of my favorite things is Revolt TV. Mm-hmm. We also have a millennial with us today.
That would be
you
me.
You can tell by the two chains and the
two chains?
Indian
two
skull. Chains. Yes. That wasn't even deliberate. Give us the 101, like the elevator version of, at least from a CEO perspective, of what Revolt is.
We're a television network, a full media platform that is passionate about music. Our job is to go ahead and make sure we report on the music culture. We talk to the audiences. We talk with the audiences. We make sure that we have an active discussion with them because this audience is powerful. This audience is influential, and this audience loves music, and they demand respect. So, and if you're going to do that, you've got to make sure you're credible, and you've got to make sure above anything else, you have to make sure you're authentic.
Right. What does respect look like to that audience? Right. Like that's an interesting word that you chose.
Respect looks like listening. You have to listen to them, and because if you look at the technologies and all the different ways that people interact nowadays, it's a two-way conversation.
Right.
It's no longer, oh, we are the media paragon and we're broadcasting to
sure.
you. You know, now it has to be, we're talking about things, we're talking about items, we're talking about issues that you're talking back to us mm-hmm. about, you know. And also, the creativity is there. You know, you see it when things happen in the culture, you know, when the Jay-Z elevator situation goes down, you see young people that are,
I've done a parody of that video, by the way.
They've done parodies, they've done memes, they've done Instagram posts. You know, you got a good amount of material out of that situation. You know, when LeBron pulls up lame in game one, you have all kinds of things you wouldn't even think about that are linked together, and they're linking back the whole Lance Stevenson thing. So it's a fantastic time, and folks, the millennial generation, the digital natives, whatever you know term that you
sure.
use. They're changing the game, and they're much more advanced. Their consumption is unusually high, and their ability to switch is high. So you've got to really, what do we know that young people like? We do know they like music at the end of the day, and that's why we stick there. So our goal, people ask, like, do you want to be the next MTV? And that's not really our goal. Our goal would be more along the lines of a CNN or even an ESPN to make sure that we provide the whole context of information around music as much as possible.
I think to that point too, it feels like there's a really good feel to the brand, right? Like there's a look and a feel, and I almost think like Vice when mm-hmm. I see it. Like it's hard hitting, but it's like super entertaining. Mm-hmm. Like how, I don't know if a lot of brands do a good job of making that translation. They say they want to be something in the marketplace, mm-hmm. and it's hard to capture that essence visually and from a content standpoint. Like, how did you guys go about tackling that voice from like just a pure visual perspective?
Well, I mean, Sean Combs is a leader. He's a marketing leader.
I'm sorry, Sean.
Sean Combs, Puffy, Diddy, whatever you want to call him. The main thing that you can call him is a supreme businessman and a marketer. So what he did that I think was great for us, one, he established the name in Revolt. The second thing he did was he established, you know, what was our mission. And that mission is in the tagline. You know, we are the new number one name in music. You know, we did not start by trying to say we're going to try to catch up. You know, we have a mission, and the mission is to work every day. You know, when we wake up, and if we wake up, you know, you know, our job is to make sure we're covering the full.
Well, hopefully, wake up.
Yeah, hopefully, we wake up. the full expanse of music. But you know, I think his leadership, you know, being beautifully unreasonable. You know, he helps all of us, everybody there, to make sure that not only do we work towards these goals, but make sure that we listen to everybody. You know, it's imperative to him that the younger people who might not know all the quote-unquote technical ways of doing something or mm-hmm. the quote-unquote this is the way this is done or the way this is supposed to be done, it's okay. Like, just go ahead. Let's make sure we get it on. And the beauty of that is that we have a product that has some authenticity to it. It has some energy to it, and a lot of folks participate in making it. And that kind of vision starts from the very beginning. Both himself and Andy Schoen when they founded the thing, and we were able to go from there.
That's great.
I have a question on, so how do you, you know, you guys clearly like curate a lot of news, a lot of, you know, hot topics for people to kind of converse around and kind of build a little subject around. So I guess my kind of question is like, how do you kind of stay objective and like, you know, not necessarily make it too TMZ-ish or, you know, over sensationalizing it. How do you kind of make it something that people want to, you know, read about, hear about, see about, and ultimately discuss with like their friends and family?
The head of news, a guy named Ramon Dukes, he comes from MTV, and he had worked with Andy before, and Ramon does a good job of working with the social media teams, working with the news folks to go ahead and have discussions. What's being discussed, you know, what's hot on the nets, you know, what's popping, what's the discussion about, and then trying to make sure you find an angle on it. Oftentimes, you know, in the world that we live in now, you can't always break the story. But it is important that we add a perspective to it. It's important that we add an angle on it. It's important that we are making sure that we are speaking for the voice of these young folks. And we're prepared as they give feedback back to make sure that that is a part of the story as well.
That's awesome. And so from a real-time perspective, right, like, you know, part of the, I don't know, the onus is that, oh, the bigger organizations can't keep up to the speed of the culture, right? Like you mentioned digital, like, or you talk about the blips where Jay-Z on the elevator or these memes that pop up. Like, you've got a 72-hour window before that's, like, dead in the water. How does Revolt keep up as a large organization where I'm actually sitting down and watching TV on my couch?
Well, I think the main thing is that you just don't look at it as TV. We have a number of different ways to reach folks. Before the television network launched on October 21st, you know, the Twitter following had been established, you know, then the Instagram was going, and then we developed the web platforms to it. We're getting the mobile developed now. So as you get all those things together, you have different ways of delivering messages, and then you can build on them in different audiences. That Revolt mobile type of thought, you know, making sure that the content is portable, making sure that the thought behind it is portable, allows a story to, you know, exist on all platforms, but to grow and expand and shape depending on what it's on. But most importantly, the thing that's most important is capture the heat. The young people follow the heat. You know, you can discuss all this.
Capture the heat.
Yeah, you gotta go get it.
It's a good title for this episode.
Yeah,
right?
That's a good quote.
You also had another one. I wrote it down when you said beautifully unreasonable as a directive from your founder. Give us an example of that. Like, what? It's such a paradox, right?
Like, I mean, it's when someone is providing management, you know, they're supposed to set goals that are attainable, that goals that can be reached and attained, so you make some progress and then you're all jazzed up to go ahead and continue to make those. Sometimes some of the things that Sean has been able to do in his career, you know, a reasonable person would not be able to say you could do that. So the way he looks through things, so the prism that he's viewing things through, is to a rational person can be, you know, unreasonable. However, when you look at it that way with him, you see there's a beauty in it, because by looking at things that way, sometimes you're able to get to places. We've been able to get to places with Revolt early on, with the way we have the digital situation set up early on, some of the advertising that we have early on, and we're there simply because that man is the way he is. He's beautifully unreasonable, you know. And it goes back to my days of working with him, you know, while working on the other side when I was at Vibe. And we were dealing with the rise of Bad Boy and different things like that. So it's kind of like a continuation of that, you know, that discussion.
So with the duality of the two of you, right, where you've got this visionary, right, and then you've got a CEO who needs to organize and make things happen. Can you just talk about the dynamic, like, you know, even maybe not even in Revolt, but I just look at like sort of entrepreneurial culture, right?
First of all, he's very busy, and he's got a number of other businesses to run that are also doing quite well. I mean, from Aquahydrate to Ciroc to what's going on with Sean John to, you know, different things on the come. He's done a great job. Then on top of that, he's an artist himself. You know, I think today the I Want the Love song with Meek Mills, you know, drops, and or at least hits hard.
It was a great trailer, by the way, you guys put on
I was just watching
Revolt TV.
There you go. Well, you know, and then but he also, you know, it's going to hit, you know, Vivo and WorldStar and everything.
Yeah, no, so it's cross promotion. Like, one thing I've always noticed, not to cut off your response, but just is like, there's always been a brilliant sense of cross promotion, you know, from efforts and brands that are representative of a collective culture.
Yeah, and there's an education to it. So I think that all the things that he has to do from a managerial standpoint, you know, he's pretty hands off. He's hands on some things on the content side, and hands on some things on the marketing side, and making sure we hit our goals. If we have distribution marks we're supposed to hit, he wants to make sure we hit them. If we have advertising numbers we want to hit, he wants to make sure we hit them. But for the most part, you know, it's been a good relationship there. But there's always going to be a good amount of tension. But I think tension is the kind of is what's necessary to build great organizations.
You need the tension,
you know?
Right?
Yeah, you need it. You know, and look, straight up, there's a knowledge to him, and there's a secret sauce that he has that you can't front on. You've got to give proper respect to it. So you've got to make sure you find ways to extract and learn. Because if you take the time to learn, just try to pay attention to the certain things that make sense. And even if they don't make sense to you at the time,
right,
they'll make sense down the road.
That's what I was going to ask. Like, does every, like, from a trickle down standpoint, does everybody need to get it? Right? Like, does everybody need to get the vision, or do they just need to play their position? Like,
yeah,
or is it a little bit of both?
I think sometimes you want everybody to get it. Other times when you're just trying to execute, you just want people to, you know, get into the stance and play the game, you know?
Right.
And understand that in these kind of situations, you might not be able to see everything because only certain folks are high enough or have enough reach to see that. But the world we live in now moves much faster, and the audience that we're dealing with is incredibly intelligent. You just, like, this you can dumb down this audience if you want to, but they're smart, you know.
Right.
They have more access to things. They can Google things.
They're more informed than any other generation
ever. Yeah.
And you know, and there's duality to that as well, because there's this know-it-all kind of stamp that gets put on exactly on like the millennial generation, and then, but there's also like I need to learn from that generation as well in terms of what is cool and what's hot, and which I guess essentially hasn't changed, right?
No, it hasn't changed, but I think the speed of what's hot and what's not is much more rapid than it's ever been, and the ability to fall off or the ability to go ahead and get yourself in different difficulties has just changed tremendously.
Well, how does longevity come into play then? Like, you know, for an artist, right? If you're an artist and what's hot and what's not changes weekly, you know, where does longevity happen?
Well, I mean, the good news for artists is that there's more independent artists than there's ever been in history, and there's more music being made than there's ever been in history. The flip side of that is that labels or the traditional structure, they are supporting fewer and fewer artists, you know? So because there's different ways to short circuit the label system, you know? It is entirely possible that, you know, 10 years from now, 5 years from now, you might not have, you know, labels at all in their traditional form. They might be more of a managerial situation at the way that technology is changing. Same time, you still have labels doing things in terms of marketing, in terms of packaging, in terms of timing, all those different things together that makes it work. But now you're seeing the rise of management companies. You're seeing the rise of managers that are able to go ahead and not just have the artist perform to make, I mean, you know, do records to make money, do albums to make money, but also perform in concerts, you know, be in television shows, do all these different things, really trying to find all the angles.
Kind of to your point, I know you mentioned there's more artists now, you know, kind of independent artists than there have ever been. How do you kind of decide, and back to kind of Chris's topic of hot or not, how do you decide who to, like, take a risk on? Like, if you saw an up-and-coming artist, how do you kind of say, hey, there's, like, some sort of X factor about you, I kind of like it, there could be some sort of zest, how do you kind of figure out who to give a shot and who to just kind of...
Yeah, because at the end of the day, your brand representation, you know, falls on that.
I think the brand representation comes from opportunity, making sure you get people that get a chance that haven't gotten a chance before. The old paradigm was one where you went through a funnel. The only way you could go ahead and get on is if a radio programmer or somebody said you're going to go on. Mm. But nowadays, people can come to the table with a lot of different ways to vote. They can have, like, you know, a Vimeo performance. They can have different things that have happened on YouTube. They can have different levels of Twitter heat. They can have regional area things. So that type, you can be hot on a mixtape. You can go up on some of the download things, that PIF on down the line. So all those data points provide people who are making decisions with different discussions, you know, and that's where it's coming from now. So it's a much more democratic situation, and democratic in the sense that people who are genuine music lovers, they're gonna vote with their clicks. They're gonna vote with what they're doing, and you're gonna see folks come out of nowhere, and that's the kind of thing that we like to be on, you know.
Yeah, that's great.
That's why I usually play my piccolo right after I spit a hot verse in the freestyle.
Yeah,
well, so I had to leave my mark. You know, yeah. It's like my stamp of
you got to keep it going.
Dropping the mic.
drop my piccolo. So you talked a little bit about your magazine experience, right? Like, speaking of what's said to be a dying industry, and it is in many ways, but coming from that. Whether it's either from a content perspective or from a business perspective, what of your skill sets or your experience translates now that's kind of a fuel, if you will, to avoid potholes and things like that?
I think the working with Vibe and also working with ESPN, you learn the urgency of now, the urgency of making sure you have the most up-to-date story, you know. You learn that you can't do a story too much. You know, if you're talking about Jay-Z and the elevator, you can't talk about it too much. You know, if it's Tim Tebow and whether or not, you know, he should be quarterback enough, you cannot talk about that enough. If it's Richard Sherman or whoever it is, if it's Kanye, you know, if it's Beyonce, if it's Katy Perry, if it's Rihanna. That energy,
innovation crush,
yeah, to be able to talk about all these folks and keep that conversation going and get different angles on it, that's what you learn. That's what I learned from all that the news is important, that the information is important, and people want to know. And this is how there's a currency when you're a young person. If you're knowledgeable about, you know, the area you're talking about,
sure,
especially on culture, you know, there's a currency to that, you know, and people respect you for that. But conversely, if you're just going off the top, you know, you kind of look yeah. Right, you know.
No, and that's great. You know, we talk a lot on the show about just the successful organization's ability to gather perspectives, right? And to discuss a Tim Tebow from 17 different angles for weeks It's amazing. It's almost like hip hop, right? I always wonder, like, it's always the same subject matters, right? But the way somebody says it on, you know, on this verse, and then the way somebody says it again on the second verse, oh, like, it blows your mind. You just said the same thing, right? But it's, you know, there's that humanizing of poeticism, and it sounds like that happens, at least from your perspective, in whether, you know, editorial in a magazine, you know, a sports announcement booth, or whether you're curating content for...
Passion wins. People who are passionate about, you know, what they are, what they're interested in, what they're talking about, that really wins. Music generates fans. Music generates people that, you know, want to talk about it. They want to know why certain things are happening. That discussion is going. And now as music's starting to move outward, you have more and more festivals. You have more and more performance opportunities. You have more and more ways to get it. It's going to create more conversations.
When you talked a little bit about the editorial stuff, part of me goes like, why do we care, right? Like, why do we care about Jay-Z and the elevator? Why do we care about, you know, we had a reality TV series, Mogul, a guy who's Forbes 30 under 30, has 40 hours of television, you know, on the air this year. And you go, all right, but like, is it, why are we drawn to that collectively?
I think you're drawn to the achievement. You're drawn to the way people's lives are changing. You're drawn to, you know, how that affects their music and their message. You're drawn to the relationships that they have. You're drawn to all the different things that make a life. And music is kind of like the soundtrack of that. You know, you can always question whether or not some things are far too intrusive. Are we getting too deep with some of these things? But the main thing is to make sure you give people what they want and make sure you talk to them and make sure you put the right kind of perspective on it. Your job is not to say you shouldn't be listening to that, you shouldn't be watching that. Your job is to make sure you're putting perspective on it against what's going on.
I have to tell that to my wife. You shouldn't be watching that. Hold on, I got a perspective on this. Where do you go to find like good, poignant journalism? Like, where does the Keith Klink scales? Like, when you're down and you're in your house shoes and your pajamas, what are you consuming?
You know what the way I used to read a lot of magazines and newspapers, but now the beauty of it is that the articles just kind of come to you and you click through and you link through to the articles. So I've gotten further and wider in my reading than ever, but I don't read as deep into any one situation. I'll read an article in Sports Illustrated, I'll read something in the New Yorker, I'll read something in the Atlantic, I'll read something in Ebony, I'll read Slate every now and then, The Root, all these things that come together, the Hollywood Reporter, Billboard. These things are all, interesting, but the main thing is it's the basic headlines and decks. It goes back to magazines and newspapers. Like, here's the headline. Okay, here's what the story's about, and here's the deck of why you should read it. And that's basically how my day goes. Right. And then sometimes, to be honest with you, I'm a fan of the Daily Show. So nice. I learned about a lot of things,
That's pretty much my news source. Like that. From like the way I consume news.
Yeah, and things I probably wouldn't be too interested in, but the way they're presented and the kind of arguments that they're having, it's a lot of fun, It's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
We tell people this show is a combination of The Daily Show and Fast Company.
There you go.
What do you think?
What do you think so far? I feel that energy, I definitely feel that energy.
Nah, I don't believe you.
are you big on social media? Because I know you mentioned all those sites and blogs.
I lurk around. I'm not big in terms of being out front and active, mm-hmm. but I definitely think watching a game or watching an award show mm-hmm. with Twitter next to you is a wonderful experience. Because you get to hear all the things that people are saying.
I love. Comments it's like one of my favorite things
about
just
the internet.
You watch any YouTube video, read a blog on you can see the most beautiful thing ever, a quarter of the way down somebody just ripped into it and it's hilarious and disturbing and
there's fun to it and there's folks that have made quite an impact by doing that, but it's also what powers, I think it's the single factor that really empowers not just a generation, but it's helped us as a network, as a media platform, mm-hmm. change ourselves. Because we were born in the social media environment. Most people mm-hmm. who found out about Revolt found out about it on some form of social media first before they found out about it on television.
Right. I worked for a company called Machinima, and mm-hmm. Our audience was very near and dear to us, right? Mm-hmm. Authenticity was mm-hmm. the word at the top of everybody's list. When brands come into play, it gets a little more difficult. Not impossible, but it's a lot more thought comes into it. Eventually, you guys have to start keeping the lights on and mm-hmm. keeping the cool suits.
Right.
How do you balance that with preserving the brand and making the money?
Well, marketers, people that are that it's their business to market products, especially to people that are younger. It's their job to be cool. It's their job to work at being cool. So they're not trying to go ahead and put out, bad advertising and do things that are not authentic, not genuine, and certainly not organic. The whole notion of branded entertainment, I don't want to say it's gone away, but people have started to work about more organic ways to have their brands involved. And they work hard at it. And when you see different things break through, when you see different, you see mistakes happen, but at the same time, you see people recovery. Sometimes the recoveries are wonderful also. So I think we live in a real good time. There's always a challenge, though. There's a challenge when, it always stems back to one thing. Are you listening, truly listening to the young people? Just because you have the title, just because you have the position or the money from the client doesn't mean that you're right. It means that you're disempowered. But the true empowerment comes from, are the folks buying it?
Right. That makes total sense. The show is called Innovation Crush, mm-hmm. Where we obviously look at a lot of things we crush on that are innovative. What else, aside from Revolt, do you see out in the marketplace that you find as an innovation, or like it can be anything from space travel to food to, you know, you name it. But like what's something that kind of gets your goose on the...
I think the situation that's happened with Apple and Beats, I think that's a very exciting situation for music. It's an exciting situation for artists and shows the power of extending the
Tyrese commerce. Was excited.
Tyrese was a little too excited, just a tad too early. You know, he might be excited to tune about $200-300 million excited, right. but you know, I do think that really. You know, made a mark, and that gives people a whole new level of ambition, a whole new level of, you know, I can do something. And you look at what's happening with Facebook, and you look at what's happening with Google, and you look at all the big companies that have developed in the digital space. And so, you know, the innovation that's going on digitally is exciting. The cloud has just really been tapped. It is, really haven't got into all the different implications of that. Then the next level of the internet is going to be all these devices that are not quite dumb devices, but that are internet enabled, talking to it all the time. So,
yep.
You know, closets that know which clothes to put up front, and different things that, you know, with your cars, and all these different ways to make sure that all the things that you interact with every day are using the internet on a full basis. So we're coming to a very exciting time.
It's interesting you talk about that. There was a guy we had on recently named Chris Dancy, mm-hmm. and he is dubbed the most connected man on earth. Mm-hmm. Has all sorts of sensors. You hear him talk about the future of humanizing technology and how he's living it. I mean, he got rid of his dog's car sickness because he put a sensor on the dog and a sensor in his car. He walks through his house, the lighting changes, volumes of music change to match his decibels as he's speaking. It's really, really crazy stuff. He was actually able to quit his job this past March and basically be a full-time sort of spectacle speaker. Mm-hmm. You know, he's on his way to Cannes. But to really see that in depth and see where the possibilities are, I would love to also see what the future of entertainment will be in that, you know, in that space.
I think at the end of the day, though, for all the wonderful things about technology, all the interconnectivity, at the end of the day, it's a great story. You know, mm-hmm. if you had a good story, you know, that's going to be the thing that carries the day, and how you present that story, and how you surround it with music, and how the music helps tell the story.
Yep.
You know, the technologies may change, the way you deliver them may change, but the consumer demand is not going to change.
That's so very true. It's funny that you even say that, because we did ask him, if you got rid of all your devices and gadgets and sensors, what's one thing you feel like you would need to keep? And he thought about it for a second, and he says, Last.fm. Mm-hmm. It's like his music, like, don't mess with my music.
Yeah. And it's important, you know, and the ability to relax and to hear your different things is just something that's special.
I'm going to ask you to complete a phrase for me. Mm-hmm. Kai doesn't even know this one is coming. Mm-hmm. You nervous?
Yeah.
Okay, that's good. No, it's very, very easy. Innovation to me is
culture, you know, coming to life. That's the innovation. Anytime you see culture take on different roles, and culture continue to expand the boundaries of what was possible before. I think that's true innovation.
That's great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
How can people find you? I know you don't social web too much, but
no, I'm on Twitter at KT Klinkscale, CLINK.
What's the T stand for?
Terrence. Wait, I had to respell it. KTCLINKSCALES.
That's great.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, guys. This has been another episode of Innovation Crush.
Innovation Crush.
And we'll talk to you next time.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schleichinger, slicing drew. I've been friends with her for 10 years. One of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore because it's here and it's funny. And I love you.